for knowledge. They sat around the fire and talked. They related things. They orally taught. It came in the form of stories. So one day, I decided we were probably at the end of a book. I decided I'm going to tell a story after school, after recess today. And after that, my children didn't want a book anymore. Mr. Whit, tell us a story. Mr. Whit, tell us a story. And there was something there I didn't even realize existed. The ability to tell stories. But I also realized the power and the opportunity to communicate things through stories. Children remember stories. Everywhere I go, in visiting schools, I have to expect to tell a story anymore, either at devotions time or in the afternoon. And in the case of some schools, and some of them have been present right here, they'll make opportunity to squeeze two of them out of me. So, that's okay. Storytelling, it's powerful. Now, you're wanting to hear stories because you're interested in just seeing what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you a story, first of all, time allows, maybe two. First of all, I'm going to tell you a story that comes from a series of stories that I had been telling my children and grandchildren. And it has to do with, most of the time, an outdoor setting, something having to do with nature. Children relate very well to those settings. I do myself because I enjoy outdoors and camping and fishing and hunting. And a lot of things can go on out there in that world. But everybody likes a hero. And in this series of stories, they're called the Old Man on the Mountain stories. Because there's a character that remains a mysterious character. No one has seen him except his silhouette. No one knows who he is. He just manages to keep an eye on what's going on, especially to a couple of children that get themselves in tight spots. And he seems to show up at the right time. And he has a signature that they know it's him. So, this Old Man on the Mountain story starts out with two brothers. They had been wanting to go elk hunting. They'd been looking forward to the time that their dad had taken them elk hunting in the past, but these boys decided they're old enough to go elk hunting on their own. This year, one, the older was 17, his name was Frank. The younger was 15, his name was Sam. And these two boys had been saving their funds and looking forward to elk hunting. They had been working hard through the summer. And the closer it got, the debate was getting hotter between mom and dad. Are they old enough to go up in those mountains by themselves? Dad says, look, I've taken them year after year. They're not little boys anymore. But she said they're going to have to ride horses to get up there. He said, that's okay. They're both perfectly safe. They're good with horses. Because the setting in this thing was, where they were heading up into these mountains was a good long day's ride on a good day to get up there. And they would have to go to a little town that had a stable. They could rent horses and packs and things and get outfitted and head up into this area up there. It's actually a hunting camp. And there they would connect up with a guide. Well, these two boys, finally the day arrived, and they'd been so anxiously waiting this. They went to the little town with all their gear and their jeep, and the man set them up with two horses apiece, one to ride and one to pack. And both of them wanted meat packs, and because they're both planning on packing out a 6x6. And that's an elk for a size of a... For those of you that don't know, I don't want to leave you behind. So, after they had themselves all situated, the man that was setting them up with the horses, he said, boys, he said, the trail's fairly easy to follow. He said, but it is a hard climb. And you're going to have to rest these horses every so often. He said, and on this map, I've marked the trail for you. And I've given you some landmarks. I've marked some places where you'll find water, springs and things like that, to help you with watering the horses and giving them a break. I encourage you to give them a break every so often. Other than that, watch yourself. Sometimes you're going to be on trails that are going to be mighty sheer off the side. Both of these horses are good horses. The boys had been watching him as he talked and saddled. And the one pack horse was kept kind of pitching his head back and forth and flipping his tail, and he seemed to have a little bit of a problem. Both boys knew horses very well. They were watching that beast. They had their question. Finally they said, what's with this horse? And the man said, oh, he'll calm down. He just needs to get out and get some smoke out of his chimney here and some wind out of his sails. He'll calm down and he'll be okay. All right. So they were finally set, all their gear on, and off they went. And they stopped along the way. But as they were climbing in altitude, they kept noticing that the clouds are kind of moving in a little bit. Hope it doesn't rain. Frank said, it won't be rain, it'll be snow if it comes as high as we're getting and as cold as that wind is. And the temperature was dropping down and the clouds were building up. And they would stop every so often and rest their horses. Everything was going good. They had stopped at a nice little wooded glen by a creek and unhooked their horses, and they were taking a little extra break here. The two boys decided they're going to walk around a little bit, and this trail was climbing up, and another trail took off up a mountain that kind of came in on the side of the one they were heading up. And they looked up there, and the one, and Sam says, look, do you see what I see? He said, look, right up there. And standing up there, on that side of that mountain, on a trail, was a big bull elk. He had walked out and was just kind of testing the air, looking for a girlfriend. And they couldn't believe it. That's what we came up here to do. And Frank said, let's do it. You're kidding. That thing's so far out of range, we'd have to put salt on the bullet to make it to him. But they decided they're going to wait a little bit and see where this fellow's going. He stood there and tested the wind a little bit and turned around and walked onto a trail and kind of went out of sight. But through the trees, they could see that trail switchbacks. And sure enough, they saw him flashing through brush. He's coming down that trail. They decided they're going to position themselves to let him come as close as they can and see if he'll come out into the open again. So they unpacked their rifles and got everything ready and went over and got positioned. Each of them found a good spot. Frank says, who saw him first? Sam said, I think I did. Okay, what we're going to do is we're both going to get set up, get in a good setup. And we both can shoot, but Sam gets to shoot first. If you're effective, he's yours. If not, I'm going to take him. Okay, good enough. So with that agreement, they start looking around there. And they were walking through trails, and trees were kind of over them that were shielding them from this elk. They weren't afraid of being seen, but they kept glancing up there, you know, keeping themselves kind of in track of where he is and what relation to where they are. As they were going around a trail, Sam was following behind Frank. All of a sudden, Frank froze. He just totally froze. Had his gun hanging down here beside him. And he was looking up. Sam wonders, what's wrong with him? He said, hey. He didn't move. He looked up there and stepped forward a little bit, and he saw what Frank saw. There on a limb, up there on a side of a tree was a mountain lion that had been kind of out of the way when they first came up there, but now they had come over into his area. And the thing that was so startling to Frank was this cat was crouched down and his tail was hanging over the side of the limb going flip, flip. And that tells you that in his brain, he's thinking about jumping. Frank was, there was a lot going through his mind. One of the things was, can I get out of his jump range? The cat was standing right over top of the branch, kind of looking over it, crouched. Well, Sam had seen the cat. He stepped up enough to see the cat, but the cat couldn't quite see him because of the limb. So he decided he's getting back to where safety is, and he slowly backed up, ever so slowly, so he wouldn't draw attention to himself. Frank was what the cat was looking at. He was looking around this limb. Frank was trying to decide, I've got to do something. His adrenaline was building up. The steam was building up. His heart was pumping like a hammer. And he had decided that he thinks he can get out of the reach of this cat if he could put a burst of speed on it. So he said, on the count of three, I'm going to do this. He bent his knees, and he'd already decided he's going to drop his gun so he can go for it. One, two, bang! He didn't have to say three. He was gone. And Sam hollered, stop, stop, stop. He just like became unglued. What had happened was Sam had stepped back till he could see clearly up over that limb. And he didn't know Frank was counting. He just wanted to shoot this cat. Bang, the cat hits the ground. It was a clean kill. Well, they stood around and looked at it and talked for a little bit. Frank was trying to get his nerves back together again. And what about the elk? They went over to a little clearing to where they could look up through the trees, and they lost track of him, but he was a lot further south than what the last time they saw him. And he had heard the shot clearly too, and he didn't know where it came from. He's standing there looking around, testing the wind. Sam said, he is almost in range. So they went on to get in a good setup. This elk, he wouldn't move because he didn't know what that sound, where the sound came from. He eases out to the edge of a ledge up there and looks around, and that was exactly what the boys wanted. Sam said, I'm going to take him. Frank said, go ahead, but I'm getting him if you don't. And they were both just as tight as banjo strings. And it was a ba-bang! It was almost one sound. And his knees crumpled, and he swayed a little bit, and over he comes. And he actually comes rolling down the mountainside. They thought, oh no, those horns. But he made it to the bottom with all of the points on it. They ran over and looked, and there was two holes about an inch apart. But they had agreed, Sam, he's Sam's elk. So they've commenced to working this thing up. They notice that it's getting colder. It's getting windier. Oh, this will keep the meat fresher. But Frank said, you know, we've been at this for a little while. How much time have we lost here this afternoon? So as they worked this thing up, they decided, we've got to get back on the trail. Make short work of this thing. So they led their horses over there, and Sam had the horse that was a little bit on the flighty side, but that's okay. He had settled down as they were on the trail. So now they're starting to pack him. And they had those canvas meat packs, and they had one of those pack saddles that has the big wooden horn that you drop your meat packs over. And they had put two quarters on that thing, and they took it and eased it up there. And as they came up to that horse, he rolled his eyes and looked back there. They thought, oh, he smells his blood. Easy boy, easy boy. And they just kind of slid it up over him. Easy boy. And he's stepping around and switching his tail. Easy boy. And they centered it up over that pack stob and settled him down on him. And they had just stepped back when he exploded. He exploded and started jumping and rearing. And before they could see those packs, they have a belly strap that comes down to firm everything up after you get them on him. And he jumped, and that pack came out and slapped him on the sides. And he put all of his pressure into getting off of the ground. And he started doing everything he could do, and this thing was beating on him. And he finally tore loose. And he spun around and back down the trail he started. Running and bucking and this thing just beating on him as he was going. They knew there's no need in chasing that horse. They're just going to speed him on his way. Sam said, you know, I hope when he gets back to town, somebody will at least put the meat in a cooler for us. But so far as catching him, there's no need in trying to do that. We're just going to have to pack everything on your horse along with your things. So they did that. And they distributed some gear around. By then, it was getting cold and quite windy. The boys pulled their collars up, pulled their hats down. They said, let's ride, and ride as hard as we dare. I said, wait a minute. Let's look at the map. Suppose we're not going to make it to the camp tonight. Where are we going to stop? Well, we could pitch a camp in a little area like this if we can get shielded behind some rocks or some trees or something down. And then they were looking over their map and they said, hey, here's a town. Town of Smokestack. I didn't even see that was on here before. Well, let's ride for that. And if it's too early, we'll ride on. But it wasn't too early. It was getting cold and windy, and the climb was hard. Everybody was getting tired and wore out, and the cold was creeping through them. They said, according to the map, we should be coming up on this old town Smokestack here before long. I'm sure there'll be a place to get in out of the wind, and we can hold up for the night. And it was getting pretty dark by now, and the first snowflakes were starting to come flurrying through. They thought, oh no. And when they came around a corner in the bend, they looked up and they saw some building tops. Oh, the town. They spurred on. They pulled up when they saw the town. No one had lived in that town in a long, long time. Smokestack was a ghost town. There was no one living there. The buildings were leaning this way and that way. As they rode up to ride through that place, they were really disappointed. They had been imagining things like beds and a warm meal and things like that, but that wasn't going to be had here. Sam said, can't we just ride on? Frank says, no. He said, no, these horses are tired. We're getting very cold. It's creeping in on us. We need to find a place to get out of the wind and hold up for a while. If we can rest up for a while, we can ride on. We don't have to wait till daylight. So they saw the biggest building in town really looked like it was intact. Windows were still in. They pulled up and looked at it. But what are we going to do with the horses? So they rode around the end of the building, and there, sure enough, there was a lean-to there that had a roof over it. Just what they were looking for. This will get the horses out of the wind. So they put their three horses in there, and they tied him in there. You know, the wind was going blasting against this thing, but it wasn't blasting inside of it. And they got their sleeping bags and their flashlights and decided they're going in here and they're going to bedroll it for a little while, get some rest. And poor Sam, he said, I don't like this whole thing. Frank said, oh, get off it. It's a place to rest. It's not the Hilton, we know that. He said, yeah, but there's just a feel here that I don't like. He said, well, let's go inside and greet the receptionist. They walked around to the front door, and the front door was standing open. And it scrubbed on the floor very hard. The old door was so saggy. By then, it was totally dark. They walked in there with their flashlights. This place looked like a disaster. It had old furniture. It was completely deserted. And things were broken down, covered with spider webs and dirt and dust. They couldn't find a place that they even wanted to roll their sleeping bags out. Then Frank said, there's a door back there in the back of this room. Let's go back and see what's back there in that room. So they went back there and they opened the door, and it wasn't a room, it was a hallway. And it wasn't very long, like from here to the back of the room there. They shined down the hallway and there was a couple of doors, but there was a set of stairs at the end. Yeah, that's right. This place was two-story. Those stairs, they must go upstairs somewhere. Frank said, let's look at the rooms and see if there's a place here. So he opens the first door, and there were some old dilapidated bunk beds in there. They had fallen so far into disgrace that there was no way to sleep on them. They opened the second door, and there was a bed. Wasn't quite a twin bed. It was one of these old beds that had rope that goes across the bottom of it and had a kind of a bag filled with something crispy, which was probably corn shucks at one time. And they kind of padded around on it. And the room was very small. There wasn't but a couple of feet around the edges of the bed. But they decided this will do. It's a place to lay down. Sam says, you're kidding. Both of us are going to lay on this thing? Frank says, look, we can snuggle up. We'll stay warm that way. All right, you sure? This place was really trashed. I mean, there was stuff all over the place, kicking things out of the way, you know. So they rolled their sleeping bags out on this crunchy-filled platform. With a lot of wiggling and cracking and grunting and groaning, they got into those sleeping bags and zipped them up, and they settled down. Sam said, I just don't like it. Frank said, get over it and go to sleep. He said, just be quiet. If you can't sleep, that's okay. I'm going to. But we need to get some rest. So they were laying there. And Sam heard that Frank, he's soon breathing mighty heavy. And he was laying over against the wall. So he was warmed up pretty good between the wall and Sam. Sam's laying there. And he hears something. It's kind of a scratching movement that you could identify attaching it to something moving around. What in the world is that? He punches Frank. Hey, Frank, be quiet and go to sleep. No, Frank, listen. He said, I'm tired of listening. I've told you. Go to sleep. He said, listen. Frank said, quit making that noise. Sam said, that's the problem. I'm not making the noise. By now, Frank was awake. And he was laying next to the wall. He said, "I think that's under the bed. I can hear it over here." Sam said, "That's kind of what I was thinking too, and we're on top of the bed." Okay, both boys are wide awake now. Frank said, "We've got something under the bed." Sam said, "Yeah, I kind of came to that conclusion too." He said, "Well, just look. You want me to look under the bed? Well, you're laying by the edge." He could just imagine, you know, hanging your head over the thing. He said, "You get out, you look." He said, "I can't see out over there." He said, "They had, you know, they finally got it worked out. We'll both do it." So they wiggle and squirm down and get their sleeping bag down to their waist, grab their flashlights, and get up on their knees, kind of over to the edge of the bed there. And neither one of them wants to shine far enough to see under the bed. "You just take a quick look and then I'll look with you." "I'm not going to stick my head over the edge." "Okay, then we'll both look. Ready? 1, 2, 3. And they both look back there, turn their lights on, and there's all kinds of junk underneath this bed. Sam said, "Look, there's some fur back there." Frank said, "And it's moving." In amongst all this pile of mess and trash and junk, there's something back there that's alive. "What is the thing?" "I don't know, but it's definitely alive." They look back over the edge again. When they look back over the edge, this thing's moving around a little bit. That's where the noise is coming from. Picks its head up, and one eye, a green eye reflecting in that light, froze. Both boys are frozen too. They're looking over the edge of the bed. Then another eye slowly comes up above the junk. Now there's two green eyes. And there was a set of teeth that looked like it could eat you whole. And those boys went back so fast, poor Sam dropped his flashlight and it rolled across the floor. "What in the world's under this bed?" "I don't know, but he's got a set of choppers I don't want to get in touch with." "Well, what are we going to do?" "He's got to go. We can't sleep on top of that thing. It might come up in the bed." Frank shined around. At the foot of the bed in the corner there was a stick sticking up. He said, "Wait a minute, I've got an idea." He reached up there and he grabbed that stick, and it was the remnants of an old broom. The business end of it was just falling apart. He said, "Hey, I've got an idea. Hold my light." So he took his broom. He said, "I'm fixing to make it hot back there in that corner." And he leaned over and he went to jamming it down there. And soon it was a tug of war. Something had the other end of that thing. And he snatched and it snatched and he snatched and it snatched. And there was more snarling and going on under that bed. And he, mighty jerk, he had it back in his hands. And it had some real serious teeth marks in the end of that thing. "We've got to come up with another strategy." Frank, he was thinking hard. "I've got another idea. We're just jamming him back in the corner. Let's run him out the door." Sam said, "Okay, what's the plan?" He said, "I've got it." He said, I'll get ready here, and I want you to pull the bed out." Sam said, "How am I going to pull the bed out if I'm on top of it?" "Well, you've got to get off." "I am not getting off the bed." "No, really. Just step out and give me enough room, and I'm going to go between the wall and edge of this bed, and I'm going to strike a home run." Sam said, "I don't like this at all. Because I've got to step over in front of the door to get in position that you want me in, and he's supposed to go out the door, right?" He said, well, just pull the bed out and I'll give him a good whop and you jump back on the bed. I don't like this. So he stepped off the bed and he stepped way off that bed. And he leaned back over. Sam said, now when I tell you, pull the bed out. Not a lot. I don't want him coming up here. Just give me a good hold work through. Okay. So Frankie, he actually stands up on that crunchy stuff and leans against the wall so he has some support. He says, okay. Alright, pull it. Sam leaned way forward. He grabbed a hold of that thing. And it didn't budge. It creaked and groaned, but it didn't budge. This thing's nailed to the floor. Frank said, pull. He said, I'm trying to. He looked at the floor and he saw what it was a nail sticking up out of the floor and the leg was right against it. He's pulling it against the leg. Ah, okay. I got you now. Here we go. He knew he's got to pick it up above the nail. So, all right, ready? I'm ready. Pull. And it came. Boy, did it come. Because of the efforts before that did not work, this one really worked. It came forward so fast, it caught him across the shins, and down he went. Well, old Frank, he's standing up there now. You can only imagine when the bed went that way fast, what happened to him? He turned right around and fell through the hole. They had a nice hole, and down he went upside down, and he was upside down in a tight spot. And he hollered, get me out of here! This thing's down here with me! And he was making all kinds of explanations. He could feel this thing moving. Well, this critter decided it is time to find somewhere else to go. So he heads for the door, and poor Sam, he's trying to get off the floor when this thing started crawling over him. He just flattened out and covered his face, and it went right up across his body, off his head. And then he bolted on the bed. Frank's still over there in the hole. Help me out of here! Because laying up, he didn't have a thing he could get a hold of. So Sam drug him up on the bed, and they're both sitting there trying to figure out, what in the world was that thing? I don't know, but it's out of here. But it's still in the building, Sam said. Get your stick. And he grabbed his flashlight off the floor. Let's go. They went out into the room. They looked all around out there. They couldn't. And see, when they had come in, they closed the door. They didn't. I mean, they wanted as warm a place as they could get for the night, but they closed the door. And over behind an old table that was flipped against the wall, they found a big old fat possum. And if you've ever gone eyeball to eyeball with a possum that was very irritated for being poked around on, and I have, they are ugly critters. And a mouthful of teeth, and they'll hiss and carry on and bite if they have to. Well, these two boys, they were pretty shook up by now. They escorted that possum out the door, whether he wanted it or not, and shut the door behind him. And they realized that they had invaded his home. With that door being open, that possum came and went all the time. That was home for him. But he's going to sleep outside tonight. So Sam said, can't we go? Frank said, no. Look, we're two big grown boys. That was a possum. We need to go get back in bed and lay down and go to sleep. So back in there they went. Sam asked him a couple times, don't you feel rested up? Don't you reckon the horses are rested enough? No, we haven't been here very long. Just get in your sleeping bag and be quiet. He did. He was used to being obedient to his older brother. And Sam was laying there and he was thinking, I'm going to try one more time. If we would just get up and make us some coffee or something, be quiet and go to sleep. Okay. So everything was stone quiet in there, and he heard old Frank over there against the wall breathing heavier and heavier. Well, he can rest, but I'm not going to, is what Sam was thinking. And then he heard something out in that front room. Frank, you better go to sleep and leave me alone. No, but you need to listen. And Frank had learned something the other time. Because he didn't listen, he wished, you know, he would have been in on it earlier. So he decided to at least kind of, okay, all right, what's up? There's something out there. I hear something. Frank heard it too, just kind of a general thump bump. Sam said it was louder than that a minute ago. It sounds like somebody walking on the porch, doesn't it? Frank said, maybe. And he was drifting off a little bit when they heard scrapes. Scrub, scrub. Sam said, that was the front door. I know it was. That thing scrapes the floor. That was the door. Frank's awake now. Yeah, I think you're right. What was it? Maybe the possum came back in. No, for real. What do you think? It really sounded like the door. And then they heard steps. Well, they heard the door go back closed. And these two boys are wide awake now, and they are frozen. They heard steps coming across that main room. Old creaky wooden floors. It sounded like something heavy walking, like a grown person. They heard the door at the end of the hall open and close. They heard the door in the first room with the broken bunk beds open and close. And their door wasn't closed. It was open partially. But both of those boys were in those sleeping bags turtle style. And those sleeping bags were kind of nervous. And as the steps came closer, Sam just couldn't help it. He had to look. He pulled that sleeping bag down, and he saw a big, dark shape go past his doorway. And they heard the steps go on to the end of the hall. Up the steps it went. They heard walking around upstairs. And then back over, down the steps, and down the hall. And when it came back down the hall, they were too scared to look again. But the steps went on outside, on through that room, and they heard that door drag open and go back closed. They laid there very quiet for a few minutes. And Sam, in a real small voice, a little boy voice, said, can we go? Frank said, I think so. So out of their sleeping bags they came, and they rolled them up, grabbed their flashlights, and they headed out through the shining very carefully everywhere they went. And it had started snowing pretty good while they were in there. They opened the door, and out on the porch were a big set of tracks, of a man's tracks. Ooh, those are big boots. They turned and went that way down the street in the snow. Our horses are over here. Let's get the horses. So around the end of the building they went. Frank came to his horse first, and his pack horse, and he was preparing to tighten cinches up and get the show on the road. Sam went around. He said, hey, Frank. Yeah, what you want? He said, didn't we tie three horses up here last night? He said, yeah. He said, there's four here now. Do what? Frank walked around the end of the hitching post there, he shined, and there was the horse that had ran away with the pack on it. And it was tied up in line with the others. And they looked at that. This something's wrong here. This place is just... I don't like this. Sam said, well, get on your horse and ride then. Let's go. So as Sam was untying that lead, he noticed that in the knot was a turkey feather stuck right through the knot. What is this supposed to mean? He pulled it out and he stuck it in his hat band. He didn't know what else to do with it. On their horses they went. When they came out from beside that building, it was blowing. But the moon was shining too, kind of through the clouds, but it was blowing flurry type snow, you know. They walked out into the street and Frank said, look. Sam looked. He was pointing down the street. They're standing down there with the snow on the ground and everything making it as light as it was. They saw the figure of a large man. And they froze there. They pulled up their horses and he just simply waved like that. And a big wind of flurry and snow down the street it goes. And when it settled, he wasn't there. They turned their horses that way. And out of town they went. They came into camp a little right at daylight the next morning. They went up to the main camp store. And the fellow that was there said, hey boys, we were expecting y'all in last evening. They said, well, we got one of our elk on the way up. And he'd been looking through the window. He said, yeah, I see, that's a pretty impressive head you got tied on top of that pack out there. They said, yeah. He said, but where did y'all sleep last night in that snow? They said, well, back down the road here a ways, there's an old town, I think, Smokestack or something. Y'all slept there? They said, well, the only place to sleep. He said, nobody has stayed there for a long time. And the last time someone tried to, they didn't have a very peaceful night. He said, well, ours was a little bit that way, too. We kind of had a run-in with a possum that had taken up residence. And they weren't noticing, but there was a little boy and a little girl that had come in the store. One of the guides lived up there. And these were their children. Their mom had sent them over to the store to pick up some things that she wanted. And they were just kind of standing inside the door. These men were telling their story, how the horse had ran away and mysteriously showed back up and tied itself to the post in with the other horses and all this. They said, but the unusual thing about it was, there was, the crazy thing, this horse, and he was trying to think of how to explain what, it was something in his mind. He said, oh, and he reached up and pulled that feather out. He said, the knot had this feather stuck through it. And as soon as those two children saw that feather, they knew what was going on. They lived there. That was the signature of the old man on the mountain. Whenever he was present, there was always a turkey feather left behind. When they saw that turkey feather, they knew who caught that horse and brought it back up there and tied it up. And the old man that ran that store, he said, well, boys, there's some mysterious things that happen up in these mountains sometimes. We can't explain exactly what it is. But there's definitely somebody that's involved in it. And we've come to call him the old man on the mountain. None of us have ever seen him. We don't even know if he really exists. It's just kind of an answer to what happens. But often there's a turkey feather that comes into the picture. And see, this boy and girl had been in... There's other stories you won't hear tonight that involve them. And that they found turkey feathers in the past and they knew what was going on. So, tonight you've heard an old man on the mountain story. This is a series of stories I've been telling for some years. I started out with my grandchildren, started telling them to children. Someday they might end up in a book, if I can find someone else to write it. What time is supper? 5:30. You've got time for one short one. This is a true story. This happened to me. I used to moonlight doing electrical work in the evenings after I got off work. I'm a licensed electrician. And I would do work for different people. I had a man to call me one evening and said, "Hey, I've got a trailer that I'm going to rent out. I'd like for you to go fix the water heater. Water heater's not working." The last renters that were in there, they've moved out, so the place is empty. Okay, I'll try to take care of it. Well, it got late that night before I could get around to this water heater. And my brother-in-law, who was about 14 or 15 at the time, probably 14, he often went along with me as a helper to do things and companion kind of. So I asked him, "Hey, you want to go with me tonight to fix the water heater?" And he said, "Sure." So it had gotten kind of late. We went up to this ranch. It was at the Diamond D Ranch in Perry, Georgia. And the man told me where it was. He said, "It's back. This trailer is back in the trees, in the pecan trees. You're going to have to go find it back there." Okay. We somewhat knew a little bit about the ranch, but not real well. So in the dark, you know, things don't look quite the same. We went up there and we shined around looking for this trailer. We couldn't find anything that really matched the description of what we're supposed to be finding that no one lived in. He had said they'd moved out. So I was ready to give up the job for the night. It was getting later all the while. And my brother-in-law, he said, "Hey, there's a lane that goes back through those pecan trees over there. Maybe it's back there." Well, that doesn't fit the description, but we'll check. So down through there we went, back in the pecan tree. We drove pecan trees. We came out on a clearing back in there. And sure enough, there was a trailer sitting there. I told him, "Now this doesn't quite match up, but it might be the place. But I don't like this. This was back before the days of cell phones. And not everybody had telephones back then, especially in rural settings like this." And I told him, "I just don't like this a bit. It doesn't feel good. This may be someone's house. No vehicles here." "Okay, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to check it out. I've got a key." The man gave me a key for the place. "We'll go in and check it out. But we don't want to act suspicious. Suppose you were back here in this trailer and two men pulled up back here," and it was dark back there too, "two men pulled up back here and started going around checking your doors. What would you think? They're burglars." I said, "You betcha." You know what burglars do? Sometimes they end up looking like thieves. And I'm not hankering to get shot. And that was really in the back of my mind, because this is South Georgia. So out of the door, out of the car, I said, "Okay, let's check it out. Let's just talk, you know. Somebody was watching. They probably thought we were lunatics and it escaped from somewhere." I said, "We're here to fix the water heater. I hope it's not hard." I was making all kinds of racket. Anything but looking suspicious. I walked up to the front door and the key wouldn't open the door. I thought, "Good, let's leave." He said, "Maybe it fits the back door." I said, "You." "Okay, let's try it." So I went around the end of the house and I drug my hand bump, 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 bump along the metal. You know, I was coming up with all kinds of things to say. Walked up there, up on the porch, stuck the key in and the door unlocked. Okay. I told him, "Look, I don't like this. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't quite look right. Don't turn any lights on. I don't want anybody else that might be back here to see lights coming on in this trailer if this is not, if, you know, what, whatever. Keep your light low below the windows. The door we came into was, there was a hall that went this way down through the rest of the trailer. In front of me was the washroom, and here's the bathroom, and here's the bedroom. I told him, okay, you go that way. I said, look in the closet, look for a square on the wall or something like that. That's where people like to put water heaters and trailers. But be quiet. And he said, why? Nobody lives here. I said, this doesn't feel right. So I told him, go. So away he went. I went in the bathroom there in the laundry room. I'm looking for this water heater. And I'm quite familiar with these things. Not there. Oh, I bet it's in the closet in the bedroom and backed up to the bathroom. So I pushed the bedroom door open, stepped in there, and I thought, this looks like someone's home. This doesn't look like people moved out of here. But there's no one here. I had a flashlight in my left hand because I had pushed the door open with my left. And I looked around, and there was a doorway that went into another room, and there was someone in there. And they had a flashlight. I thought, this is it. The main thing that went through my mind is, let them know it's okay. Don't. You're not a robber. You're not here to kill them. Let them know it's okay. Do you know how hard it is to command your faculties when you're scared to death? I wanted to say something, but it didn't come out. I looked in that room, I said, my first thought was, get Nathan and get out of here. Nathan is quite easily frightened. I can tell you some good stories about him. I went back down the hall there and found him in a bedroom, snooping around in the closet with his flashlight, you know, looking at things. I walked up around him. I said, hey! Going on? I said, let's just go. And I kind of pushed him over a little bit, keep him below the windows, and was escorting him down the hall by his hip pockets. And we got back there to that back door, and I thought, this is just too good. I can't, just 1 minute, 60 seconds. It's too good. I said, hey, you need to look in this room. And I kind of pointed off in that corner. I said, you really look in here. What's in here? Look, you'd be very surprised.
I let him get all the way in the doorway. No, that way. Yeah!
There was his beautiful self. So I doubled him over and shoved him out the back. And away we went. Went back to the man that owned the property that night. I said, hey, I said, we couldn't find that trailer. We tried, or at least somebody's living in that trailer. He said, no, no one's living in the trailer. I said, someone's living in this one. He said, well, where did you go? And I explained, and I was talking to the man's son. And I explained to him where we went. He said, that's my trailer. I said, well, this is the key to your back door. So we did go back and fix the right trailer then, in the daylight, though. But thank you for listening. I went over time a little bit, and supper's waiting. God bless you.